Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Warui Desho podcast made in association with Wave Motion Canon. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, Twitter, and sometimes the Wave Motion Canon YouTube page. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at Warui Desho or email us at waruidesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Warui Desho's Stream of Four, covering the promised Neverland, we're up to episode 3, 181045. Which makes it sound like a radio station. I'm sure these, like...
Playing all the hits, all the hits. It's DJ Sudan in the morning.
Anyway, with a distinctly urban flavor this week, I of course give you the Subtle Doctor.
Konnichiwa. Yeah. Steven Spielberg des.
And we've been Sukoi. Warui Desho. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. We'll see you all next time.
Sukoi!
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 Dude, those clips. God bless Danny.
Oh my God!
That was a find and a half. That was as rare and as precious as the amber from Jurassic Park.
It was.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone.
Anyway, before I forget, of course, we have the First Lady of Warui Desho, the Dark Web herself. I give you Vargelia.
Hello. Something I really want to point something out now that it's my time to speak. You people will never see it, but it's so adorable. It's like we play the music, but I can still see what these two are doing, but you can't see them. And it's like this subtle doctor here is just kind of headbanging to the music, but he's the only person that can hear it in time. So he's headbanging. He's having a ton of fun. And then Shadon just looking dead and
it's my gay face. I'm getting my gay face on, right? Don't you judge me. Don't you judge me, right?
I'm not judging you. It's just adorable.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm preparing in case I need to lie in front of a maternal figure who I've known all my life and may potentially be sending me off to be eaten by demons.
Right.
Clearly. God.
If anyone honestly can explain to me how I can set this up so they can hear the music. That'd be great.
You really can't.
That's
listen,
it now.
Listen, people, I appreciate this dynamic. I appreciate it. I thought it was adorable. I wanted to let the world know because I appreciated it so much.
I feel my face growing hot.
This just means I now have to throw in some gimmicks next time, like where I just like, you know, start making faces. Okay, like, or just put the ironing board in place of me.
Oh my God, the ironing board.
Yeah, before, your new obsession.
Before we started this, I was like, oh my God, I want to start photoshopping ironing boards just in the background of like anime.
That particular
just
one.
Screenshots.
As well.
This particular one. I have not found it on Google something. But but I will look for it.
Fucking hell. Anyway, so episode 3 of The Promised Neverland. We're going to talk shop about this in just a moment. But firstly, Doc, I believe we've got polls.
Twitter polls.
Yep.
We have polls. Oh my god, yes.
Twitter polls. I'm going to pull them up now. Why didn't I have them already pulled up? Your guess is as good as mine. All right. Polls. Here are the polls. Polls for episode 2. Is Mom the scariest one? 45% say fuck yes. That is the plurality of the vote here. 23% voted hell yes, and 32% simply voted yes. A very tepid third. Or the
we
third,
should rerun you know. This poll later on after shit hits
I know,
the fan.
I know.
I want to compare figures here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How you feel about Mom now? And here's one that I threw up for giggles because of something said in chat. Is Norman Yandere? Yandere. Is he Yandere? Yandere.
Yandere.
60% say maybe. And 40%, I am of the 40% say no. He's my lovely son. How dare you call him Yandere?
I am now of the 40%, honestly.
Fair enough, then. Well, then, thank you, everyone who took part in those polls. We're going to have some more coming to you later, but for now, let's actually start talking about this episode. So, episode 3, we've, of course, just to pick up where we left off, introduced to Sister Crone, anime's latest racial stereotype. Congratulations. Fucking brilliant. Now, I want to just repeat something I actually said to Embrace Concepts, a.k.a. Beth, on Twitter. Shouts to you if you're listening. Just to offer my perspective on this, having fallen a little bit, and take this as the ignorant, 31-year-old Milky Bar kid perspective that it is. I am of the opinion that Crone's design, in part, may be to be reflective of, the new understanding the kids have of adults in this world now that the big twist has happened. Mom, if the roles been reversed and Crone was there originally, she probably would look a lot more normal as opposed to she does now. And then if Mom came in, she would look a lot more monstrous. Because they still know Mom and haven't shaken that kind of perspective, that's why she looks the way she does. That's my feeling on this. It is merely a feeling, though, and I have nothing to base on. But yes, I will also just say... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, you do it. You'll do it better than me.
I was just going to say as well, though, that with that perspective out there, I'm going to just also restate that in case you can't tell, or if you're watching this, in black and white or in audio only, that I am as white as the driven snow. So don't take my perspective as anything, something is just other than academic. If you want a genuine opinion on this, ask people calling, about this, their feelings on it.
I'm sorry. I'm responding to chat. I'm so happy. I put something, I don't want to pressure Yuki on, but I love when Yuki does art for the show. and you may or may not have seen the ski-free art from last episode. And so I just put a little something out there, people were responding well to the Yan Deer comment. And I said, now we need art of Norman with antlers on. And Yuki, I didn't want to be like, hey, Yuki, do this. Because, you precious free time, you don't want to be like, hey, spend it on. And he said he's on it. So I can't to see it.
To be fair, Doc, you missed your opportunity to say to take the buck by the horns, but well.
Oh,
there'll be chances for in the future.
Damn.
But anyway, so just to reiterate again, I think I could speak on behalf of Doc and Vargelis. We're of the opinion when it comes to Crone that if you want to read it as being racially insensitive, you're entirely within your right to do so. I personally think it could have been handled a lot better. I think there are moments in this episode where Crone actually looks a lot more normal than she otherwise does. Most of the time, when she's not looking at the children specifically. Which is the little bit of evidence I would offer in favor of my theory. But I'm also very much, of course, the opinion that, it is racist, it's stupid, and they could have done this a lot better. And come on, this is an adaptation. You do have free license to change shit around, if you so choose. Which, by the way, will not be the last thing I'll say about that in a bit, coming from the guy who's not read the manga.
I'll say, obviously, the character is what the character is supposed to be. We need a crazy character to kind of offset the dynamic they have with Mom. They need basically a wild card to drive up the tension. That's fine. It's fine to have that kind of character. it's fine to have that kind of character be a person of color. Like, but like the kind of art style and everything kind of hints it in a very kind of disrespectful way. And the art style primarily does that for me, at least.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, so I spent some time this weekend looking through Twitter. Our friend and your friend, James Beckett, from Anime News Network, started a conversation about this. And there's, like, you know, he was asking people of color specifically to respond, I think, because, you know, like you guys, my initial response to it was like, wow, like, a lot of these features are so outsized and seem to be, like, I don't know, like, poking fun, like, being derisive about people of color here. And this is such a tricky thing, like, because the responses are run the gamut from, you know, oh, I stopped reading the manga as soon as I saw her design, to, like, I understand what you're saying, but I like this design way more than just a palette swap. Like, any old anime character and hit the shader to darken the skin, that seems a lot more dismissive. So, I mean, gosh, like you say all the time, Shadon, your mileage may vary. Like, I think, like, there's a myriad of valid responses you could have to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. If you can't see, I'm a white anime cat girl. Yeah. I'm not an authority on this stuff.
All right, so we'll leave that behind for the time being. Let's move on to talk about the plot of the episode. So after the OP, because there is no, like, pre-OP little bit here, just go straight into it. Sister Crone is being shown to her room by Mom, and the kids are watching. They make note that she's being put between, like, the kids' three rooms, because they, again, whether it's true or not, they're seeing all of the things that are happening as power plays or moves by Mom to, you know, frustrate them or, you know, trap them even. And that would seem to be the case, although I would offer later that, funnily enough, this might actually be a mistake on Mom's part. So, in the library, the three of them, Norm and Emma and Ray, are having a discussion about various elements, firstly being about the tracking devices. Where are they?
Can I say, whenever anyone uses the phrase, or especially starts a discussion with the phrase, in the library, do you all automatically think of Clue? Because that's where my mind goes immediately. Like, the next sentence I think you're going to say is, like, with the candlestick, Professor Plum. Like, anytime, that's, I feel like that's where I've heard,
to be fair, the phrase Ray the does most. Have, Ray does get a Clue kind of, you know, line of thinking later, but we'll get to that when he's having, you know, discussion with Norman while they're washing up. In this library, so discussing things like, you know, what tracking devices, where are they kept? Sister Crone, according to Ray, is actually a good thing because they now have a second source of information to go by here. Try to remember the specific minutiae of this scene because there's a lot to take in. Oh, by the way, one thing I want to note as well that I found really interesting is that we also get a world map in this scene. Now, I know that seems like a really obvious thing. Like, it is set on Earth. Of course it is. Why wouldn't it? But the map is pretty much, you know, our modern map. It's our world. With the difference being that Australia is instead called Oceania, which I think is the region or territory.
It is. It is. Oceania is the actual name.
Yeah, and it's not George Orwell's 1984. I mean, this is not like a side story to, you know, his magnum opus. Thank fuck for that. Although I could also believe it, funnily enough. If you want to slot this into canon of 1984, I'd buy that. But they make the realization that, wait a minute, the new kid, Carol, that's come in, fresh out, maybe the marker for the tracking device is there. And Emma, of course, you know, heads off to go check that. But in the meantime, of course, our two villains, Crone and Mom, are having a discussion. This, I want to point out, because this will be important for a talking point later, is one of the first scenes that we get where the villains are on their own, and we're observing them as an audience without the children's involvement or filtered through their perspective. This will be important later for something I want to discuss in terms of how you frame such stories and how you differentiate between audience knowledge and character knowledge. But we'll come to that later. For the moment, though, we learn a couple of things about Crone in this particular scene, such as that she's very, you know, I want to be like in your position, She's also very subservient, very, you know, respectful of mom's, like, role. We learn, like, that mom has, like, you know, done a lot of great things in her time. We get her name, which is Isabella. Mom, of course, doesn't give a shit. It's like, you know, don't blow smoke up my ass. Let's, you know, keep this on track.
You don't fuck around. You don't fuck around with what I have going on. Like, just keep an eye on everyone.
Yeah.
Don't do anything. I got
this. Like, you're not here as an equal, basically. I just need another hand.
You do shit for me, basically. Mm-hmm. I say jump, you say how high. Simple as that. So memorize these notes. And there's a line here that I found really interesting, and I don't know if it's going to bear any fruit later. But she says something, mom, that says something to the effect of, this is, you know, no, not much more difficult than getting perfect scores on tests, by which she's referring to memorizing the notes on Emma, Ray, Norman, and the other kids. Why do I think this is important? Why is she saying about, you know, perfect test scores here to Crone? Does that mean that Crone herself was one of the children who was somehow spared from this fate? Is Crone the equivalent of, insert your own Frank's reference here, Nana, you know, sifted out, set aside for this particular purpose?
It would certainly seem to follow logically that she was once a farm kid of some kind.
Really?
Well, just based on the perfect...
Crone was a... Wait, Crone was a farm kid, or...?
Well, when mom says to her, memorize all these fact sheets about my children, it certainly it should be easier than getting those perfect scores you got.
Interesting.
I mean, I guess you could like be like, well, she's not necessarily talking about that. She might be talking about
She's talking about like the children that she's about to fight. So like she is kind of bringing her in because she's supposed to be like superior to the children. And like I thought that was kind of a, like a veiled threat. Like, yeah, you know,
it'd be a different
test. Children, you need to be smarter than the fucking children whatever.
Yeah. We can put that aside for the time being, anyway, because it's only more of an interesting tidbit than anything substantial at the moment. What we do also learn here, though, is that, Mom tells Crone some of the kids have found out. And Crone is immediately like, right, rule book, ship them the fuck out. Send them to the chopping block. And Mom's like, nope, we've got this under control. We just need to, you know, catch them and make sure they don't escape before the next harvest. Even though Crone, in my opinion, is quite right in just saying, fuck it, send them. It's not even like Mom doesn't have suspicions about who they are. Now, admittedly, Mom says that she thinks two of the children know. So she obviously hasn't cottoned on that Ray now is in the circle. But regardless, you'd think that it would make sense, you know, set point to have rid of them. Don't take any chances. And what we learn in this scene as a result is that while Crone has her own flaws of being very ego-driven, like, you know, very career-driven, like, you know, and also kind of like a bit of a suck up as well. Mom has her own weakness in that maybe she has more of an attachment to these children than she might be willing to let on, which is born true or like born more evidence or weight behind it by a line later on. But otherwise, yes, Crone is given the instruction to memorize these notes and get ready. And then we get a scene which I thought, wow, this lady's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. She's fucking bonkers.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh boy.
Guess what? A lot of this is anime original content right here.
Okay.
Well, I'll be. Okay. That's curious, but I'm interested.
Okay. Yeah, it's really No, you do it.
The like like all that right. Like in the room and with the doll, like that is
again, so she doesn't have the doll.
Working with a flawed memory here, so please feel free to pillory me if I'm wrong about this, but that doesn't happen.
Does she not have a doll at all in the manga?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
I know.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, unless
she
I just fucking skip the chapter.
She
does
have a fake child that she talks to.
She doesn't, like...
And gets responses from. Wait, I can talk to shit, but if they respond to me, then I'm crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly, Felix. So, like... several times in this episode with Crone and then with Emma too, like there's like way more talking out loud. Like a lot of the things are just thought bubbles.
Okay.
At least that is how I Yeah.
Changing internal monologue to spoken out loud.
Yeah, and in that scene, in that scene, there was no reason to do that. You know, because it's not like the kids had to overhear it. I was like, okay, the kids are going to be overhearing this. That's why she has to talk.
That was my fault.
But like,
yeah.
She's just talking to herself and nothing comes of it.
I think it's basically to show a bit more into her motivations or something. Like, basically the anime stuff is kind of editorializing things that they maybe thought wouldn't be as easy to understand from the manga. Because, again... Yeah. This character is obviously meant to be like a wild card. Like, you don't know what she's going to do. And maybe they found that a bit jarring in the anime or something.
Yeah.
I think, if it is all internal monologue in the manga, like, maybe having her act out that way was their way of having them convey that so it wasn't quite so static. Because otherwise it was just her, like, sat there in bed just going in the head.
No, it's true.
But I do agree that it's a bit strange, and I do also agree that I found it a bit weird that this wasn't the point where the children overheard it. Put a pin in that,
She's just yelling. She's just screaming into the night. And mom is like, keep it down there. I can heal all your evil plans.
You know what I really wanted to happen, right? I wanted the camera to, like, have the door in the background, and then as she finishes, like, speaking and starts chuckling, I wait it to zoom to the keyhole, and he cuts the other side of the keyhole, and Emma's there, and she's like, shit, dog! Who the fuck? She's losing the fucking marbles. Now, here's the thing, right? I'm actually okay with this, depending on how it's developed, because I like, firstly, the visual metaphor of, you know, this adult does not give a shit about the children and will send them off to, you know, be turned into meat, but cares more about her fake child doll thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because
she really does have, she has another motivation that they, you know, kind of, like, she mentions it during that monologue, but they don't really talk about it a lot. You know, she wants to be a mom. And she's like, what, I can be a mom now? Instead of just, like, waiting and kind of going through whatever system she has to go through, whatever kind of waiting line, she's like, I could be a mom now if, like, things go badly for Isabella here. Another thing that I really, and I'm going to sound like such a, like a Debbie Downer, because I don't necessarily,
well, that was my job.
I don't necessarily hate this in principle, but, in the manga, the way I kind of interpreted Crone is like, she has on kind of a mask most of the time. You know, she's happy, like she's smiling, she's kind of effervescent, always playing with the kids. There might be a little bit of creepiness there, especially for the kids that realize what's going on. But she doesn't really take off the mask and show, like, the horrifying expression, like, all the time. You know, like, she's just, like the time when she finds Emma and the kids looking over the rock. That was the time she did in the manga. And it's super effective because it's like, oh, like, her true feelings are coming out. And they do come out when she's having, you know, her own inner monologues and stuff like that. But I felt like they were just kind of projecting all over the place throughout this episode. And it may be what you said, Vorg, that they were like, look, we have to get a lot of these feelings more, like, extroverted and out in the open for anime viewers or whatever.
I was just surprised that we got, you know, Scarface from Batman in this show. But, hey, it was going to happen eventually, so there we are.
Yeah, I guess, like, the shouting, like, people are talking about the shouting. I didn't even mind the shouting, because it's like, they're kind of trying to hit you over the head with her personality, with how she acts, and it's like, it's less shouting, and it's less about the shouting, more about kind of her performance. It's like, oh, in the anime, you know, when they don't show, like, crowds of people in the street and only show the actual characters, like, oh, no, the street is empty. Why is the street so empty? It's like, it's just a way to give her character or beat you over the head with her character in a visual way. This is a visual medium. So I don't care about the shouting or like, oh, they could have handled it better. Maybe they could have handled this entire character better. But like, for what they were going, the shouting and the crazy stuff was consistent with what they wanted to do.
Yeah, like I said,
I'm trying to defend the thing I don't like.
Oh, get the optimism, lift it. Yeah, like I said, I don't hate it in principle either. Like, yeah. I mean, and I can see someone else like making that kind of argument and being like, yeah, sure, like that's cool. I'm tainted, you know, because I read the manga first. So it's always the first thing you see is going to like bias you and stuff. So,
All right. So next scene, Ray and Norman are doing washing up, and well, they're doing better than I did at their age. I didn't do shit for chores back then. So that's nice of them. But they're discussing more, you know, elements of the escape and also Crone's arrival.
Wait, before we leave, like the Crone scene, especially there's the general talk of Sister Crone and that scene in particular. One thing I did like about it was I actually, like, regardless of whether you think conceptually this is a good idea or you like kind of this characterization, I thought the actor, like, really crushed it. Like, I loved the voice. I like the singing. It was so good. like, I will be a mom. Or what, like, I can't even remember what she was singing, but, like, it was awesome. And she was so, like, inhabiting that space, like, just killing the role. So to that degree, I was like, okay, like, if we're going to kind of alter her or reimagine her slightly, like, they're just, the actress is going for it, and I like that.
Yeah, she's hamming up a little bit, which I do think suits the character. I mean, Crone very clearly is a contrast to Mom. Mom is cold and clinical. Crone is, like, a complete, as you say, wild card, a little unpredictable, a little taps in the head, and that in of itself is a different challenge to handle, like, someone that can be that kind of unpredictable, how do you deal with that? Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, washing up. Ray makes the suggestion with a tapping of his foot that it might be necessary to kill both Mom and Crow.
What a prison scene that was.
Yeah.
Like, showing him under the water. Like, that was brilliant. Yep, brilliant.
Yeah. A strategy that I had to think about, and I was like, you know, morally and ethically, I should be against this, but as far as pragmatically goes, like, I get it, because, well, they would at least be out of the way.
They shank them, dude. They want to kill you. They see you as food. You shank them good. No bullshit, right?
No bullshit.
Shank
okay.
them.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think they're just worried about, like, what will happen if they die, right? Like, will there be some kind of alarm? Like, will the Demon HQ be notified? Like, there's so much they don't know.
This brings up some very interesting questions. Like, are they basically kind of subservient and, like, kind of working? Like, to what degree are they subservient and are they expected to not do their job and rebel in some way? Like, to what degree do the monsters actually trust them? And that kind of brings out more questions as to, like, the structure of the society outside of the thing. If they willingly went to the thing and went to do this job, which is, I think, is implied because Crone seems pretty happy, and then Crone was like, yeah, Mom, you were like the youngest person to be appointed Mom. I'm such a big fan of you. So it seems like they were willing to do it. So probably they wouldn't have like tracking devices or shit. They wouldn't have kind of security measures to see if they leave or to see if they die.
Do they have heart monitors though?
Heart monitors. Oh my God.
Well, they do have.
Well, I guess, okay. So if they were put on the farm, like, they certainly had a tracking device originally planted in them. The question is, like, do they take it? I don't know. Anyway,
more mysteries.
Go ahead. Yeah, so much
so
mystery.
Crone and jump, like, they notice that Crone is, like, getting along really well with the kids, which is not that surprising. I mean, at this point, it's only Ray, Emma, and Norman who still know the truth. And as we'll later find out, they do address the fact that, as I said last episode, kids might not believe us. You know, I say, oh yeah, Connie was devoured by fucking Satan's, you know, nephew or some shit. They're not going to buy that.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Trying to scare us.
did not happen.
Yeah.
But Crone ends up getting them, tapping them both on the shoulders, introduces himself to her. And this is where we learn a key strength that Ray has, which is that his, you know, almost antisocial nature, his cool-headedness, like, really, really helps him, like, you know, stay under the radar. Like, Norman's just like... And Ray's just like...
Ray will never change. Honestly, if they're going to pull off, like, Ray having the sort of scared face or changing his emotions or whatever, that's going to be, They're saving that for the super high impact scenes. For some fucking heavy shit. Yeah. They're saving it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for the moment, he's keeping himself under the radar here and out of suspicion. No surprise, after all, that Mom hasn't clocked onto the fact that he now knows as well. Anyway, so Emma is now checking out Carol, the young baby. This is a scene that serves...
This just confirms something you guys were asking about in the last episode. Like, how young do people... do the kids come in? Do they have a place to keep the kids? Like, what's that all about? They have a nursery, like, dedicated to, tiny babies. And the older kids come in and change them and love them and feed them and play with them. So that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. So this scene serves two purposes, or rather three. The goal of this scene is for Emma to find the tracking device, which he does, but two things otherwise are gleaned from it. The first off is, I can't immediately remember the name of the other child, the one with the big hot glasses.
Gilda.
Bill.
Gilda, thank you.
Gilda.
Gilda is there. And Emma's like talking out loud here about, saving the children.
I don't think that happened. I don't think she talked out loud.
She did not.
In the manga.
I think
noticing her kind of noticed her body language and mannerisms and her being distracted, like her general manner, more so than, excuse me, tracking devices? What are you talking about? I can hear you.
Saving the children.
I can hear you.
He's being right here. Yeah.
Interesting. What I thought, so when the Saint is talking about the tracking devices, like, oh, so Emma doesn't talk in the...
Right, yeah.
That's what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Insofar as that's so, like, she is still checking out Carol, like, top to bottom, mm-hmm. which
that's
is
a pretty, probably... That's a very important scene to me, mm-hmm. honestly, mm-hmm. especially because, like, in the last episode, we kind of saw Norman's weakness. Or Norman's the white-haired dude, right?
Norman.
Mm-hmm. We kind of see Norman in a kind of moment of weakness. Now we kind of see... Emma
the Yandere.
Not necessarily actually like kind of being absorbed in the problem solving and all that stuff. And then she doesn't actually listen to the glasses girl who really does have something to say to her.
Mm-hmm. Like, Why are you doing this?
She kind of wavered a tiny bit mm-hmm. in like mm-hmm. the thing.
Mm-hmm. And this scene also features the little kid, Carol, gripping Emma's finger.
Aww.
And
yes.
Now, holy shit.
I love babies. That scene. Ah.
That cute baby noises. How can you go wrong with them?
Man.
But I want to talk
Emma, about... Emma had a bigger reaction than you, dude. Like, yeah. That's our protagonist. Mm-hmm. Emma, like, that's the moment Emma is like,
she's like,
fuck
hug.
It.
Hug. Like... I
have to save everyone.
Must protect.
I want to say two things about this that I found really telling. The scene in which Carol grabs Emma's finger is such a powerful single frame shot. Like, I feel like it sums up the entire show in one go. Which is, mm-hmm. you've got like this human connection of this young child holding this, relatively speaking, adult. To at least a child, like, you know, a character. It's a human connection. It's a very intimate and sweet moment. But in the foreground, out of focus, are the bars of the crib cot. And that is the metaphor for the entire situation in which they find themselves in this prison that they're in. Restraining their freedom, but not restraining their ability to connect, you know, to have these moments of genuine human interaction and connection. But they still need to break out of it. So, for me, like, that one moment, I was like, boom! Like, that was the mic drop moment for this entire show thus far. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. I loved every second. But yeah, put a pin in the fact that Gilda is taking note of this. while also having the clouded glasses afterwards, you know, the very impersonal touch that's often used in anime to show that someone's, you know, not on the same level or with the same wavelength as the characters otherwise in the same scene.
Just, she does, Carol looks, not Carol, is it Carol? Carol, the baby, looks so much like Emma. And keep this
and
in,
I
keep this
that
in
was
mind.
Intentional, oh. In some way.
Yeah, no, I it for
we
sure.
We discussed it, I think, last time.
We did. Well, here, so Trickster has said in chat, like, oh, like, Emma, you know, not very smart, like, at any given moment, she's as dumb as she needs to be or whatever. Like, here's what I'd say if you think she's a detriment to their plans, is that really kind of exhaustive and broad and difficult plans like this need, of course, project management, tactical acumen. But all that can fall apart if you don't have the absolute will to get it done. And Emma, more than anyone, has the will to see this through and to get herself and her people out of this situation. And that is a huge strength.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as I said previously, you know, they're all going to be shipped off for their meat eventually. So, do it or don't. Like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Get everyone out if you can. Like, it might be a detriment, you know, in the end that she brings all those kids with them. And indeed, I realized in rewatching the OP this episode round, there's a part of the OP where the various characters, Emma, Norman, and Ray included, are behind a chain link fence and they're all like scowly, like, yeah, come on. Note who is not in that crowd? Gilda.
Mm-hmm.
There's your hint. They're not getting out with everyone. I don't think they will. I don't think they'll leave with everyone.
I'm saying,
I mean, like, what,
nothing.
What did they? What did they do to Gilda though to make her kind of like a snitch or like a thing? Does she know? Was she just kind of brought into a room, and they said, "Okay, you're going to die unless you do the thing"?
I don't think they've done anything. I think Gilda is simply like, when you've lived that kind of life where, you know, you're comfortable, you're happy, and you stick to the rules, you know, and you've never been hurt. Like, why would you break from the norm? And you see suddenly some, you know, someone else acting out of line. It seems like doing strange things with kids.
I really don't think that's it, though. Like, first of all, they weren't really acting out in line. Gilda seemed concerned already, even before she saw, even like as she was looking at like Emma doing shit. But
well,
like
she did ask about did you see at the, you know, the gate?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So the like the kids were basically like, you know, mom wants to kind of spy on us without spying on us. And she has kind of backed off and she's not really doing that much. So she has to have kind of like a spy. I think that's what
I don't think this got that far. I don't think it's that far. I think that instead that rather that mom is, you know, just letting things play out for the time being with Crone, you know, doing her bit, being the overt agent. But I think that if when the time comes, she will then tap Gilda for information. But I think that's not happened yet. That's my feeling on it. I think that we might be going a bit too ahead of the curve here and attributing plans or actions that have happened that have not as of yet.
Well,
I think the seeds are being sown for Gilda to play a part, but I don't think that she's even consciously aware of what part she'll play yet, only that she feels unease at what's happening with Emma in particular. That's my feeling on it. Okay. Mm. So.
Zipping the lips.
After that's all wrapped up, I believe, we get a Mom's Shock Shock radio show.
Yes. Coming it's to true. You from the basement of, what's the name of the farm? Fuck. Sakura Gardens. I'm just going to make the name up. Farms. The basement. It's
really
midnight. Pirate radio.
Is it in the basement? Well, whatever.
No, it's in the attic.
It's in the attic. That's where yeah.
This is radio. It's theater of the mind. No one will know if you don't tell
it's
them.
It's like
the basement.
Some huge ash. It's some huge ass radio equipment. As if she needs to like fucking... As if it's like 80s equipment.
Yes! It's like my stepdad's stereo, which is like... Like 4 feet tall. So many decks. crazy. Oh my God. She's gotta like balance the EQ so that the demons can hear her nice and clear and smooth. Don't want to turn up the treble too much.
They ain't on digital, that's for fucking sure. But anyway, this is Mom doing her nightly report. So there's your answer, like, you know, to what happens if Mom is killed. They don't do, you know, the call in, and then the demons are like, wait, what the fuck? Yeah, I was waiting for Yuki to do that. I was waiting.
Oh, man. The callbacks are strong.
They are.
Is that like Yuki
said they should call. Yes, it is. As Yuki said, we should just the radio show, the pirate radio show Mom is hosting from the basement should be called. She should say, coming to you live from the birdcage. Because that's the fucking home of the Franks kids.
Oh, them shitheads.
Gracefield.
Good,
house.
Keep it that way.
Thank you.
Keep it that way.
Thank you.
All right. So, the report's only brief, but then there's an answer back, and it's grandma. So we've got a hierarchy established. Moms, yep. grandmas. And she says, look, right, how soon can you ship off the kids? And Mom's like, right away. To me, the way that was said, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, expressed a tiny little bit of reluctance, but ultimately adherence to the request. I could be wrong on that. Hmm. But this is also where we get a segue into what is essentially demons playing poker. we had a joke and a laugh about this off-cast.
You liked that.
And the thing, I'll be up front here, because I want to save this for a talking point later, but I actually didn't like the scene in which we see the demons shooting the ship. I will go into more detail with this later, but for me, it takes a bit of the edge off the more and more we see and learn of them. Particularly if it's information that's not filtered through how the kids perceive them.
Hmm.
Like, I think back to, it's kind of like a continuation of the issue I had in episode one, where I felt it might have been a little bit better if the demons were not in full view. Like, if we only got, like, to see little bits of them from Emma and Norman's perspective when they were at the truck. And here, we've got them, you know, going like, well, we're going to have to harvest for the Tifra, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But him is going to have, like, you know, the best meal of us all. And Bob, how's your kids? Is your daughter Gracie still attending Sunday school? Like,
so, I talked about this before that, but holy shit, the place they're actually in, like, this sort of decrepit fucking stone surroundings.
I can't see it.
They're in a fucking cave or something.
The background looks like shit. It really is just, like, random blue crystal.
Yeah. Guest designed by From Software.
Oh, no.
Don't throw shade on our beloved From. How dare you?
What I think, like, yeah, in this case, this is kind of another case of, okay, we're kind of showing the perspective of the villains a bit more. So we're kind of showing the opposite side of
the demons.
Like, the yeah. No, I'm just saying, I'm gonna get to that. So I'm just saying, like, you know, we're kind of showing the opposite side of this kind of chess game. We're establishing our villains. We're establishing their motivations and shit. Why the fuck do we need the demon scene? The demon scene's, like, thing is basically, oh, okay, it's really important that we get these children. These children are really important. If you screw up, I will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's basically just there to up the stakes, which... Hey, isn't that what the added scenes and stuff for Crone is also kind of doing? Was the monster scene even in the manga?
Yeah,
or something. Mm-hmm.
No, okay. It is. It's it's basically like that. I mean, of course, the blue crystal is not there. And I think. You kind of only get shots of, like, you never get, like, a full, like, shot from head to torso. You see, like, a hand, like, the right side of the face. Like, you see, like, a weird shot of the camera, like, going below the demon, going up. So, but yeah, I mean, it's basically there. I didn't hate it as much as you did.
I don't really care.
Well, I'm sorry.
I get it. Yeah, like, I get its purpose in the thing. It's like, okay, cool. Like, Mom has a lot to kind of, like, maybe it kind of shows why mom is doing the thing she's doing. That's why she's not shipping them out. She's saving it for this huge special occasion. She's going to keep her job and she's going to be amazing and stuff. So it's kind of like establishing motivations and the overall like conflict a bit better.
Yeah,
to me, but they could have been done. Yeah. It could have been done a bit better.
Yeah,
that there's, I think it just shows too much. I think.
Here's the thing, right? I'll save it more details. But do you know what this gave me reminders of? For those of you who did watch our Frank stream of thoughts, the fucking Robo Bishop Council shit.
It's no, how no,
no,
how no, mm-mm. No, 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 no. Do not even compare the two yet.
No, like, no, no, look.
Do not
look,
invoke look. The name of Ape and the Robo look, Bishops look, here.
Look, right. I honestly, it was nowhere near as obnoxious for a very good reason, but I'm saving that for the talking point later. But to me, it broadly fulfills the same function, which is it's doling information specifically to the audience, like tidbits, like capitalized him. Who could that be? What's this festival thing that they're going, the Fratelli, I don't remember what it's called. You know, what are they doing all here? Like, and that's fine, but I'm already on board with the show's premise and very invested in, like, what's going on. And the fact that, well, there's no more threat, more primal than, oh yeah, demons are going to fucking eat your face. Like, this isn't doing anything for me. It's just...
Well, look.
There.
Okay. So, again, blasphemy has been committed on this show because you fucking brought up the robo-bishops about this. I will get you for that. Mark my words. Number two is, like, so I wouldn't want them to, like, pull a Lost and just not ever show anything. You know, I like to get some kind of visual answers, right, about this. And I don't know, maybe the rationale behind it is, like, okay, look, like, yes, these are terrifying, but like Warwick said, we need to kind of more clearly gesture at the hierarchy and that the reasons this is happening, that this is not like a sort of band of
concrete, though.
Not like a band of like evil beasts who are just like, let's evil. Why can't I more evil? Give me more evil. You know, it's like
the demons this around the table eating children.
They're not actually demons. But this is just what they call them, by the way. Like, we don't know what they really are, right? So, like,
a rogue by any other name.
It's just a different civilization that they're giving us a peek into, you know? They're giving us a little sneak peek into this other civilization that it would seem has subjugated, you know, humanity either in part or in whole.
What, this pre-poker game shit going on here? All right, so let's do... All right, aces high, Texas Hold'em, let's go.
That's right, They're cultured. Demon culture is high culture.
I'm surprised one of them is not wearing a top hat. I feel like that would work. But I get where you're coming from there, Doc, but the problem is that, like, this to me also, funnily enough, reminds me a little bit of the Dino thing in Banana Fish, in that you can't really sell me on subtlety. Like, when, in Dino's case, you can't sell me on any subtleties about his character because he's a fucking paedophile. End of story. Like, there's no dealing that. And you can't really sell me on too much subtlety about this right now with the information we've got when they eat children. Like, you say that they're not actually demons, but, well, you know, they eat children, and that, to me, is something a demon would conceivably do. So,
well, not to go all vegan on you or whatever, but, like, is this not, like, what the cows would say? You know, like... they're eating our children. They are so evil. Like, and it's like, no, we're people. We have to do it. And they're like, no, you're evil. So,
we don't have to do it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not. I have to go all vegan. We don't have to do it, and we're doing it very inhumanely too. That's why the metaphor for like a cow farm, for like a slaughtering, like thing, actually works so well with this, because it kind of, like, puts us in that position. And yeah, we're kind of doing the same thing, except, like, a lot worse. So yeah, you know, if I was a cow, I would think of you specifically as a demon with a ironing board.
Moo.
Moo. the point of that is, like, you know, they don't understand them. Maybe they have higher purposes. Oh, it's him It's he slash him. He wants his child meat. Well, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's, like, the most well-done thing in the world either.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't know, maybe they're, like, going for some sort of moral gray or, like, look in the mirror, bastard. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
No, I get that. But, I totally get that. I totally get that.
But, like,
but I don't think they're like, hitting... Like, I totally get why someone would think that. I totally get it. This is a thing that people who have thought about this sort of thing before would see parallels with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's specifically what they did. Maybe that's kind of what they did with the thing in general.
Yeah.
In a bit right. more of a subtle way, but maybe not necessarily the scene was like, oh, okay, this is morally gray. Because gotcha. It kind of wasn't. Anyway, right. I will refer to that guy as he slash him from now on.
Every time you say that, I think of the villain from Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, no.
Mojo Jojo?
Mojo
no,
Jojo.
Literally him.
Him yes, is a villain. Yes.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, so
yes.
I guess I'm not well steeped enough in Powerpuff lore.
Oh, God. How do I...
Never mind. The weird Satan person with the skirt or something. Was that him? Was that him?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just take a moment? No. But just we brought up cows, and I just have to say this because I don't think I'll ever get to say it on anything that we do ever again. But did you know that you can talk to the cows in Dragon Quest XI, and they talk back to you and give you a weather forecast? That's the thing that happens in that game.
Okay.
All the cows. They say, moo, boy, get everything that you need done during the day, because it's going to rain something fierce tonight. Moo. And every single time...
I thought there was no cow level.
You could do that like 500 times, and on the 500th time, it would say... Wow, like you'd get a prompt from the unseen narrator, like, or the thoughts in your head or something, like, wow, like, it seems this cow can predict cows can predict the weather. Isn't that crazy?
We're talking about cows. I need to say this. Get this off my chest. Val, you're such a huge cow. Aww. Like, I so thought you were going something stupid with this. No, that's amazing, though. That's really good.
Right. Moving on. We're not going to have a cow anymore. We're going to move on to the next scene.
Am I leaving or like?
No.
Are we going to move on?
Oh my god.
Huh? Huh? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have a stake in this conversation.
I've got real beef with you now, Vori. I think I just pulled the calf I reacted so hard.
Okay.
How long are we going to milk this joke before we move on? Utterly hashtag ridiculous.
Hashtag sponsored by Nando's.
Product placement
in the back of Shadan. Shut.
Right. Okay. So, moving on. Kids are outside playing.
Let's hoof it to the next point.
Yes, let's. So the kids are outside playing. God, I've completely forgotten her name now.
Gilda,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Gilda is paying attention to Emma, who's throwing a ball around. And in turn, Crone is paying attention to Gilda. So obviously you see, like, the gears spinning in everyone's heads here. Our trio of heroes meet in the woods to start discussing more minutiae of their escape. This is where the topic of, how do we convince people if we're going to, to leave us or not comes up. Ray suggests he has a means of dealing with the tracking devices, which I don't know if we mentioned. There was a lump or like a cyst found in Carol's ear on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's where they believe the tracking device is planted. Whether or not that's true or not is a matter.
Well, so Emma kind of, instead, in addition to being like, oh, this is like a bump or whatever, She kind of like squeezed it, and it made like a kind of a like a sound that you wouldn't expect from an ear bone, you know. So they're like, "Oh, this is it. This is clearly it." And then she, you know, checked Gilda.
I fully expect. Wait, it's gone from Gilda?
Well, she checked like Gilda's ear, not the device, but the mark.
She checked the, right.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I misunderstood. But, like, I fully expect Ray, who was like, okay, I'll find a way to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And then, like, three episodes later, Ray shows up with a baseball bat. Like, this is only going to hurt for a moment.
It's going to hurt me more than it hurts you, I swear.
Oh, dear.
The first swing might not get it, but... at least three.
We'll see.
Definitely by the third one, it should be broken.
Mm-hmm. One thing they also note about the tracking devices is that the functionality of them, Ray points out that because Emma and Norman haven't yet been fingered as the people who, you know, actually went to the gate that night, that evidently the tracking devices are not A, always on, or B, specific people. Like, they can only track people moving around. They can't be, you know, specific as to their identity. Or the location, or even be used to track them in time. Because otherwise, if that was the case, you know, Mom would have, like, you know, gone to her tracking device and gone, right, rewind 12 hours, blah, 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 right, got you. But they do point out that if they destroy the tracking devices before they escape, then that could potentially trip, you know, the system saying, right, this has gone offline, that's a bit strange. What's going on with that? One thing I want to know about the camera while we're talking about this scene. All of the stuff with the discussions of the forest, or in the forest rather, a lot of the shots are framed from behind foliage, with that in the foreground, out of focus, characters in focus in the back. And I really, really like this as a way of selling the idea that they're constantly being watched. Mm-hmm. If, I mean, by us, by, you know, Mom and the demons, you name it, they're always being observed, and it actually really gels that together quite nicely. This is the point where Ray also then brings up again, as he's mentioned before, that a lot of the kids are liabilities. Just because they're either physically unfit, relatively or absolutely, or because they are simply children or babies even. And so Emma comes up with the idea of, okay, how do we get them out? And B, how do we get them ready to get out? And we do a 2-for-1 deal on this. Mm-hmm. We disguise it as a game of tag. That's how we'll get people ready. We'll train them in the tactics. We'll get them a little bit fitter to be ready. And this then actually leads into a scene of them playing tag.
The music. It's so good.
Oh, my
so
God.
So good.
It's like awesome. They really started kind of getting that actually, like, main style of soundtrack out. And, that's mm-hmm. the quickest way to get in my pants. It's that soundtrack.
Heck yes. Pants down for the OST.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and they use two different, I mean, maybe they'll end up being the same song on the album, but it was at least two different parts of the song during the first and second games of tag. The first one, I was like, oh man, this is so good. And then during the second game, when Crone was involved and, like, they hit the sax hard, I was like,
yes, oh my God,
yes, feed it to me. Too many
praise
years.
Praise the sax. I love it.
Yeah.
We also get introduced during the scene to my immediate mark for first one to die, which would be Onion Kid. Because his head is
Onion Kid!
He's literally shaped like a fucking onion. It's incredible. He's going to get eaten first. I'm calling it now. He's getting fucking eaten. They, of course, start training, teach him, like, you know, how to hide footprints, what direction you should travel with, you know, with the wind to avoid your scent, etc. Mm-hmm. Crone, however, spots this and decides to, you know, elbow her way into the actual game. And this is where things go up a level because, of course, all the kids apart from Emma, Norman and Ray are like, oh, cool, you know, our new lady's coming to play with us. Yay!
Right.
And they're all like...
Yeah, Crone is basically just kind of, since she roughly has a plan on, like, capturing the children herself and stuff, she's kind of now trying to kind of figure out their capabilities and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll discuss like the whole chess game a bit later, but that's a really cool step.
Yeah. So Crone does indeed play tag with them, and she displays a number of cool techniques, one of which is cutting out, like, you know, enticing shapes out of leaves to attract, like, the younger children.
That was very clever.
She also does the classic Kool-Aid by bursting straight through a tree.
Oh, yeah!
They don't show it. They just, like, play the sound over a shot of nothing happening, and then they show the destroyed tree. Mm-hmm. Which was so sad.
I'm so sad that there wasn't actually like a crone shaped like shape, like, yeah. It was out of Acme cartoons, like this, like, you know. next time perhaps. So indeed, all the kids are gradually rounded up, leaving only Emma, two nameless kids who we don't know yet, and Ray and Norman. And
Ender's like the cool sort of time saver. And again, this is totally anime original, which is probably a super obvious thing, but when they kind of have her to the left side of the screen, the left third, she's kind of running, and then the other two thirds, in the upper right, they have the big clock, and as it ticks down, you get still shots of the different kids she's caught. Sorry if you just actually said that, and I was reading the chat, but I just wanted to point out, like, that was a nice...
No, that was nice.
I mean, we don't really know what's an anime original or not. We haven't read the thing, even though two episodes ago I said it was.
I will say this, as a British man, like, when I saw that clock, all I could hear in my head was the countdown theme. Emily, who I know is in the chat, I imagine you now probably are hearing that in your head. But anyway, so yeah, Emma is the first one to be caught.
This British humor spot is brought to you by Nando's. Nando's, it's cheeky.
Oh my god. Oh my god. It's official.
It is. I mean, I'm getting sponsored by Ironing Boards, by Nando's, by Thatcher's Cider.
No! Thatcher's!
Not that Thatcher, no.
Is it Timothy Thatcher, the wrestler?
No, but it's not the
Thatcher from Rainbow Six Siege?
Yes! Okay, cool. Yeah. okay, so Emery's caught up to it, and she actually grabs two kids out from the... out from the road that they're on, as Crone is coming towards them. Now, Emma conceivably, by the way, I should note, could have just stayed in the bush that she was hiding in. But, again, this is consistent with her character. They're in immediate danger. Danger, quote-unquote, here, but, well, you can imagine what it'd be like down the line. So she intervenes. And they're caught in this open area with a couple of rocks and trees. And Emma's hiding behind it. And this is the point where... I don't know if Crone starts reading from the DO playbook here, but she starts listing off their weaknesses, like their individual, like, you know, like, yours is your naivety. Ray's is that he's, you know, cold and that...
Well, he's quick to abandon ship on a plan if he thinks there's even a slight chance that it's going to go awry. He doesn't stick with anything. Norman is feeble, which is interesting, like...
Which is interesting, because he's the second most athletic person.
That's what, in the beginning, they were like, you know, yeah, he's, that he is athletic, and he plays tag quite well, in addition to being a smart strategist and finding the kids, like, he can hunt them down. So,
if I had to guess, I'm going to bet you that Norman's feebleness is not so much that he's not athletic, but rather if he gets hurt or injured or worn out.
Yeah, maybe
he recovers very slowly.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. So, anyway, this is the point where Crone also tries to drop something on Emma, which is that, oh, Emma, what about the harvest that night? If you saw it, wouldn't you know that I'm on your side? here's the thing about it, right? Emma does indeed get caught because she's hiding behind a rock. She can't go anywhere with these two kids. But she doesn't make a sound when this when this is said, even though she does, of course, have a reaction that's like... And I think this is kind of like a half win for her because, yes, she got caught by Crone in the end, and, yes, it does suggest that she, in turn, will be... a liability or a weak spot by caring too much about the children who otherwise would, you know, be a hindrance, like, you know, going out to save those two at the expense of herself and getting all three of them caught. But she also doesn't, you know, yelp or reveal the real fact, the real prize here to Crone, which is, oh yeah, I'm one of those two, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Keep shut. So she does still win a little bit in this moment. So after that, Crone is now catching up with Norman and Ray.
Oh, no, it's cool. Like, I thought I'd raise Felix's point that he brought up in chat and see what you guys thought about it, because I thought it was actually quite good. So he says that Crone's unexplained super strength actually bothered him a lot. It makes her come off like an actual monster, and combined with the faces and the voice acting, he didn't really like the sequence. You know, I was wondering if it was too kind of picky or pedantic to be like, well, like, Crone's super strength and athleticism you could see as, you know, super stereotypical also. But apparently it bothered Felix, who is a person of color. I mean, the fact that she's way taller than Mom, like, all this stuff, like, I think it's just a lot of, it's like death by a thousand cuts with this character, maybe.
I think, like, the kind of super strength, the overt mannerisms, the, like, and all that stuff. Fuck it. You do it. You do it.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to talk about this.
Patting your avatar on the head.
All right, look. I'm going to restate pretty much what I said before. For me, I don't mind so much because I think it was meant to be a little bit lighthearted, nonsensical, like, holy shit, she burst through the tree. That's why I joked about it as the Kool-Aid thing before. But that is just my opinion. And if you in turn feel that it is a bit touched too far, makes it seem completely ludicrous or inconceivable, I can get behind that as well. There's no one right answer with how you interpret this character. If you do feel that one element of her or all the elements or various elements of her are, you know, badly written or offensive, I don't, you know, I can't hold that argument against you or dispute it because all of it's true.
Yeah. Maybe, and
not so much.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. And we don't have to, like, we don't have to spend every episode talking about this. It's just, this is her first full episode being in the show, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's not drone about Crone. Let's move on. Oh, yes. Right.
It's very interesting that her name is Crone, too. Like, oh, yeah. Let's not drone about this old Crone.
It's weird. Oh.
And what the hell?
Not what you'd think about as a Crone. I don't know.
Who knows? Can I just say something, right? I mean, the doll, like, that was an anime-only thing, yeah?
Yeah.
The doll.
Mm-hmm. I would really love, just as a funny, like, thing to happen, is if, like, in a later episode, like, she gabs off too much, and then the doll just, like, its head turns and just starts speaking, like, literally starts being like, Crone?
Kill them!
Shut your mouth. Like, if it literally just, like, it was someone on the other end, like, talking through the radio. That would be quite funny, that. But anyway, okay. So, Norman manages to escape by teleporting? I'm not quite sure. This scene felt a little confusing to me. He just suddenly ends up on a pillar up top, and he gives her, like, this Shinee look.
It was just the Kung Lao. Like, You just push down and up, and you teleport.
Yeah, actually, no. Norman gives Crone the Suka Langley pathetic look. That's what he does.
Yeah, yeah, and
that's the one.
Then perish.
Yeah, look. Yeah. And Ray catches up to her, taps on the arm, and says, "Oh yeah, time's up."
Now this right here, this is the scene that I expect Trickster and Chat to jump on as, like, ah, look who got caught and look who looked like badasses. The lady Emma got caught and the boys looked like awesome.
Were about to get fucking caught.
Sure, if there was no time.
Or, like, maybe not, but, like, what that the scene ending right there basically left a bunch of mystery. Like, how would the boys have escaped and done better than Emma? How does Crone actually step up her game to deal with it?
Yeah, yeah. And, like,
and we don't see it. It's a huge uncertainty, mm-hmm. and that's what we'll end up getting, like, maybe a bit more attention next episode, or kind of be introduced as, again, another very unpredictable thing. You feel like you haven't really seen what this character can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, Emma, you know, Emma getting caught, they seem to be, like, implying that it's purely a function of her saving the kids and having to move them around. And... you know...
It's sure, a narrative tool.
Yeah, and to illustrate her naivete or whatever, but you also have to remember, like, this is the rarefied atmosphere of a game. And
yeah, it's more game than reality still.
Uh-huh, yeah, and will these things actually be an asset when the rubber meets the road and we're really escaping? You know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So, indeed, that's the end of that. Crone's like, oh, shit, these are the smart kids this place. I'm boned.
Can I just say, I'm guessing, like, when Crone catches kids, she kind of brings them back to the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, right? Mm-hmm. How awkward must it have been when she was bringing Emma back to the tree? Like, they cut away immediately when she finds Emma, but, like, how... And she's like, oh, I saw the thing. I'm on your side. How fucking awkward would it be to kind of walk back with this person? Like, what exactly happened? Can you just go back and pretend to be happy after this person kind of just said what she said? And what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's a part I guess they strategically do not show.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So, after the game of tag, the trio are back in the library discussing the aftermath of this. And this is the point where Ray spells out to Emma, you're not considering the fact that some of the kids might very well be against us. And Norman specifically uses the word traitor. Now, I found this really, really interesting. Because here's the thing, right? To me...
Because why are they bringing in Star Wars characters? No, I'm just kidding.
Hello, we're going to introduce a new kid. His name is Sand.
Okay. I've restored my energy. All right, I'm back to normal. I've recovered. So, this is really interesting to me.
Show me your identification.
You don't need to see my identification. There we go.
Your name is Emma with two others. Not Solo. Fuck me. Has anyone seen Solo?
No.
I saw Solo with like four other people, and there was this horrible scene that I laughed so hard at in the theater, and people were looking at me weird. There's this guy, this Imperial officer, that's like, okay, Han Solo is going through the thing, going through like a checkpoint, and the Imperial officer, or either that, or he's trying to enlist to be a stormtrooper or something, or for the Empire. And it's like, the dude goes, what is your name? He's like, Han. And... what is your last name? It's like, I don't have one. It's like, who are your people? It's like, I don't have any. And the dude goes, Han Solo.
No!
That's so stupid!
Can I just...
No!
Fuck me!
Shit!
Soul Jedi from Guilty Gear is a better Nate origin story for us. Jesus Christ!
Oh, I've
never
so
even seen. I've never
theater.
Even seen that, and now I feel retroactively justified. That is the most pointless load of cock shit I've.
Oh heard. My god!
So you're telling me
this isn't a movie that I actually liked that I thought was like more Star Warsy and more adventurous than any other Star Wars movie recently? But oh my god, that scene hurt me in the brain.
Couldn't they have just like it would have? I mean, didn't he just think it sounded cool?
If he was just like, hey, your name is Han Solo at the beginning, it's like, okay, cool. I accept it. That's his name. Mrs. Solo, can Han come out to play?
I could tell someone was a fan. I've just realized with that, someone was clearly a fan of Uncharted 4 and the origin story of Nathan Drake's name. Except that it's better done in there.
The sitcom joke of make a fake name out of the objects. I appreciate this so much.
To be fair, he got off lightly then. He could have been called Han Vibrator.
I've seen this. Oh my god.
Han Dildo.
Awkward garbage in sitcoms is like my thing. I love you. This was the best reference. You get me. You're a wonderful person.
Fuck.
Oh my god.
All right, so moving away from the worst
Star
things
Wars
happening.
Star Wars has come up every episode.
Guys, let's get back on track. So moving away from the worst thing to happen since Han firing second. Moving away from that.
You did it. You did that.
Well, that's it. We're done. Ah, shit. Right, okay, so the reason I find the use of the word traitor interesting is that, like I said before about Gilda, there we go, I remembered on my own. But like I said before about Gilda, to me, traitor is something that you have to consciously, work towards, yes, to actively betray. But the thing is, Gilda, if she does end up, turning traitor, quote-unquote, she could be doing that unconsciously.
Mm.
Letting things slip. But already Norman is seeing an enemy,
yes,
that very, very well not be an enemy. And that could be a really important factor in,
Oh, Norman said that. I thought Gray said that.
Confident it was Norman.
I think it was
anyway.
Norman. I think it was Norman.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? If they want to get everyone bored, should they not be, jumping to conclusions?
Yes, that's a really important scene, too. It kind of highlights how Norman is really looking at this whole situation, kind of dividing characters as, these are allies, these are enemies, these are unknowns, and how he's kind of logically structuring this in his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is also not he's not
he doesn't care necessarily about the people that much. Yeah.
Right. And I think you kind of see this in the scene where he's washing dishes with Rey, that he totally understands. Not only does he understand where Rey's coming from, that's kind of the default mode of thinking. Like, he agrees with him, but he just wants to believe so hard in Emma, and he cares about Emma, so he's not going to push that on her or on the group.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that kind of thinking of, seeing traitors where there may not be any suspicion. They're going to need to be a tightly knit group that looks out for each other when they're out there, even before they escape. Never mind when they get into the wilderness. If they're just constantly going, traitor, 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 then they're going to split apart, or people are going to turn on them. Mm-hmm. And they could get fucking mm-hmm. bloody.
I can see it very much going... Basically, them having a lot of trouble with trust issues.
This is where Emma is vital as a
yes,
as
exactly. But even then, Emma isn't even how does Emma even react in this scene?
She reacts with shock.
She paralyzed.
Because, yeah, and I think that's not because she can't believe it, but I think it's because she realizes the opposite. Because she can, she becomes aware. That is the possibility. Mm-hmm. And indeed, the closing moment of this scene of this show. This episode specifically is her looking at all the various kids around. They're all laughing and playing. We get a shot of Gilda, we get a shot of Crone, and she's realizing that while we as the audience, of course, recognize Gilda specifically from mm-hmm. Emma's perspective, any one of them
yes.
could completely by accident, or even deliberately, if given even the most meager of incentives. Imagine this, right? Oh, hey, kid. I've heard that Emma's been doing something strange out in the woods with her friends. I've got a chocolate bar. If I give you this chocolate bar, will you tell me what they've been doing? Simple as that.
Yes.
Some small children there.
Yeah, something as simple as that. And she realizes at that point that her worldview, her naivete, as Crone rightly pointed out, has died a little bit, but it's come with the cold, hard reality that follows that there could very well be people who will work against their goal.
Yeah, I mean,
the goal to
that,
save
that will
against their own interests.
Yes, that mm-hmm. can definitely use the people that she loves against their own interests to actually foil the plan.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's especially hard for her. I mean, for her to take,
yeah.
for this character, she cares deeply about all these kids. She's as close to being a big sister slash mom like to them as
she's
as
more anyone, of a mom you know? Than the actual mom.
Yeah,
yeah,
easily.
And you kind of see this kind of tiny bit gradual shift because the moment they say like, "Hey, that someone has to be a traitor," she doesn't react that strongly. Like immediately, as almost as if like she didn't
it's
quite
a theoretical
process
concept
it.
At that
yes.
point.
Yes, and then she realizes it when she looks at everyone, and what a powerful scene!
I know.
Yeah,
worldview yeah. shift.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
absolutely. And that is episode 3-1-8-1-0-4-5. Come and collect your prize.
Is that really what it's called?
Yeah, all of the episodes thus far have been numbers.
Oh man.
Okay.
That's just bullshit. Right. I hate this. I hate the episode titles.
So are the numbers like increasing in value or is it random?
They are increasing, but not by the same amount. I think okay. they're meant. I think the numbers are meant to be references to okay. characters. Who specifically is a good question,
who
but
knows?
I'm sure that we'll figure that out.
Yeah,
anyway.
We need to look. But like, yeah, maybe I had something in mind.
A brain?
A brain.
Do you have brain in your brain?
I have some corkies in my brain. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that means you're prime for getting harvested according to this show's logic.
Oh my god. Yeah. My brain is like nowhere near the maturity of a 12-year-old. I'm like at least... At
whereas mine
like
definitely
five,
is, because I'm just a fucking idiot.
I'm like a 5 to 6-year-old's max.
That's fair. All right, so talking points. I have one immediately in mind that I've been kind of, you know, peppering hints about here and there. So I'll dive into that now. So let's talk about audience versus character knowledge. You can probably think, you can name any film that you want where you've watched it, and I can guarantee you that you will have seen scenes in it where stuff happens with villains or side characters that the main characters or protagonists are not privy to them. To take a classic example... Star Wars, again, we're bringing that up again.
You just understand what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Star Wars, episode 5, you don't know Lando's plans and shit?
Yeah. Well, not even that, because his plans aren't revealed to the audience either. But
okay,
let's take,
that's what you mean.
Yeah, but let's take episode 4 here. Like, you know,
whoa!
We've got, like, you know, just... What?
James says he saw on Reddit that a fan got Ray's ID number tattooed on his neck. Please send a picture of this if you can find it somewhere. That's absurd, dude.
Man, that's going to be fucking confusing if he ever gets, you know, in an accident or something. Like, what could it mean? Is it his blood type? Fuck.
Man. Or, like...
Am I the only one that thinks, with, like, white hair on, obviously, like, younger people is hot in real life, too?
No, okay. I bring this up because this is like, you know, been talked about in chat. I used to be very anti this. Like a couple years ago, I was vocal on Twitter about like, boo, white and silver hair on young people and young characters. Like it sucks. Like it's a, but anime has worn me down and won me over. Like I'm into
it. Don't you mean specifically Berserk?
Well, yeah, the Berserk. Nier Automata. Also,
oh yes,
helped in that regard, and like a billion other anime because there's always white silver haired beauty slash hottie.
Okay, so
up in there, yeah.
So, like in episode 4 of Star Wars, like you've got the scenes like on the Death Star that, of course, the characters aren't privy to. You know, Alderaan getting blown the fuck up. Like, of course, Luke and co aren't available. So that's an example of how that works. But we see it as the audience. We have usually more knowledge than the main characters do. Now, there are stories where this works in reverse, and that can happen. Or stories where we have so little knowledge, or rather the main characters have so little knowledge versus what we do. Your classic slasher flick is an example. You know, you can see, like, the alien or, you know, the killer, you know, stalking them, and they can't see it, that kind of thing. So, it varies. Are you okay there, Doc?
I saw the picture. James said
I
the
saw
picture.
The picture.
I'm gonna see the picture.
God. Is a dude with number... What the hell? Okay, hello, guys. I'm gonna rep my favorite characters, and I'm going to wear this yellow tag on my ear with some numbers. Holla at your boy.
At your boy. Especially, like, guess what? The manga's not over. What if your boy Ray in far future ends up being, you know, some sort of fascist dictator or some shit? You never fucking know.
It's fucking piece of from Ender's Game.
What
Ray.
If he is him, he slash him? What if Ray is he slash him?
Oh, shit.
Ray is he.
Oh, he's Ryuji from fucking P3.
Ooh, great. That's a good shout.
All right, so why am I bringing this up with this show here? Now, I'm going to bring up Franks again. And I know that I brought Franks a lot, but honestly, there's a lot of comparison points to be made in terms of structure and broad premise, which is, as I've said before, characters, you know, living in an enclosed, controlled environment, ignorant for the truth of the wider world, and being exploited for, you know, nefarious ends by the government or the elite. It's the same as in a lot of youth adventure stories. I mean, Maze Run, I mentioned that, you get... So, in Franks, my complaint a lot of the time was we as the audience don't get told shit. Now, when I say that, there were a lot of Robo-Bishop scenes, like I mentioned before, where they talked about stuff, but they never explained what that stuff was. And I fucking hated that. I hate that with a passion. Now, in The Promised Neverland, there's a difference in the way the story works, a very fundamental one. In Franks, the truth, as it were, was not revealed or at least accepted by the characters until around episode 20, when it finally became clear. Would you agree with that, Doc?
Yeah, yeah, that was when
And the thing is,
the Zerg Queen, you know, was like, yeah, when that
shit happened.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, right? Franks aside, that is perfectly fine for a story. Like, you can run it that way if you wish. You don't have to reveal.
Are they talking about someone? Tell me, I don't understand.
We're talking about a show you didn't watch because you are a wise and smart person.
Great.
Continue. Okay, but anyway, like, you can pull the rug out on, like, the truth of the world at the very, very end. I mean, Knights of the Old Republic, like one of my favorite Star Wars games, funnily enough, did that with the big shock twist, like,
never
in
gonna
the closing
stop.
Quote. In the closing quote. Now, The Promised Neverland does things very differently in the... Apart from specifics like about how the demon society works and why they're doing it, the central threat to the characters that they will be eaten alive is revealed in the very first episode. So they have the truth revealed to them, not in whole, of course, but certainly the most important fact, which is that they will be killed for meat, like right away. And that is a very fundamental difference between that and Franks. And so for me, I'm actually of the reverse opinion with Neverland in that the less we know after this reveal is better. Because then it gets filtered through the characters. This is why I was really appreciative of the way the truck scene was framed and also what, like, you know, them hiding under it. And I wanted them to see less of the monsters. And that's why I'm also, sadly, not particularly on board with the idea of the scene which we see the demons at the table.
Right.
The biggest disappointment from seeing even the demons at the table is basically most of them had the same design as the demons that we saw on the thing. So it's like, okay, this is mostly what we're going to be seeing. We kind of already got a very good look at the big threat and whatever. So kind of spoiled things a tiny bit too much. In general, I'm okay with that stuff because with the rest of the stuff, like, I'm okay with showing Mom's, like, discussion with Crone and maybe showing Crone and stuff because this is basically like a chess game and they're kind of showing you a small part because obviously Mom still has, like, other plans and shit and there's still, like, motivations and kind of maybe backup plans and whatever that we don't know about, aces up their sleeve that we don't know about. But it basically kind of contextualizes the chess game a bit, which I think is one of the more interesting parts of this thing, along with how the characters develop.
In the case of Mom and Crone, the reason why I'm more okay with them is because they are direct, immediate threats to the kids.
Yes. Yes.
The demons at the table could be anywhere on the planet for all we know. So I don't give a shit about them. I like the fact that we get to see, I mean, you said about the visuals. I don't mind seeing more of them, even though I wish that we only got to see a little bit of them. But for me, I think The Promised Neverland would be better as a show and as material. And Doc is dying here.
Doc is...
He did it.
Oh my god. Do we have the dude in antlers? Oh my god.
Yes. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Yuki. Yuki. Yuki, my man. I love you. You're too good to us. You're too good to us. Using your skills on this garbage podcast YouTube show.
I thought you were just going to Photoshop.
Holy shit.
Oh my god. That's, you're very talented and you're using it for the worst reason. And I very much appreciate it. Oh my god.
Thank you so much.
That's a thank you. Oh my god.
That's incredible. Like incredible.
That's amazing. That's fucking amazing.
This is the worst Fallout Boy fan art I've ever seen.
Oh my Jesus. How dare you?
Yuki, like, if ever we meet after I finish kicking your ass at Guilty Gear, I'm gonna buy you a pair.
This is anyway. For those of you
we've played Undernight. I will destroy you in Undernight.
For those of you who don't know, this is a fucking dumb joke. I was mispronouncing Yandere and said the Yandere.
Yandere.
Yes. The point in a poll is Norman the Yandere. And the chat enjoyed it. And Yuki is incredibly talented and put together Norman the Yandere. So that's got to give it up for for Yuki.
Thank you, Jesus Christ.
Okay. What you just said, like with Franks, you're just sort of wondering as you watch it, like, do they know what they're doing? Do they know where they're going? Like,
is that referring to the show or just the characters?
the show, the whole production, and like here, you immediately get the sense, like, okay, they've made this puzzle box, like there is a plan.
So
you're more comfortable not knowing things because you feel like, okay, I trust them to like reveal these to me as we go, and they do drip feed it to you, you know, over time. But, so,
as I say, I'm actually okay with keeping the cards to the chest as long as possible in this case. In particular, I would really like if the show spent more time filtering the revelations through the characters. Because much of the show thus far has been them trying to make sense of the revelations around them and trying to puzzle things out. And so the more of that happens, the better in mind. In the case of Franks, our shows all works for its ilk, where they don't reveal the central oh shit moment until much later. Us as the audience learning things like, you know, that there's dastardly shit afoot that's going to put our characters at risk is a good thing because it raises tension. We know that there's some, like, there's an ambush coming that the characters don't know about. There's like dire shit on the way. I mean, Star Wars Episode 4 again, we know Alderaan gets blown up and we know our characters are en route there.
Wait a minute.
There's your tension.
What? Alderaan get. I'm just kidding. No, go ahead.
But there's your tension. So it's fine both ways, but it's a question always, as I say, of execution. And Franks, of course, shat the bed real fucking hard. The Promised Neverland does not, but I think that it would be sharper if it omitted giving us a lot of definitive detail about the demons at this point in time. I mean, I know that they eat children. That's the only concrete fact that I need for the time being, and I would be perfectly happy with finding out nothing else about them until after the kids do escape.
Do you think Mike Tyson is a demon?
Is he a raging demon? Or is that wrong character shit?
Yeah. not M. Bison. Mike Tyson, who... I think it was Mike Tyson that is famous before a fight, saying, like, I'll eat your kids.
I will eat his soul.
Buster Douglas, I'm already a demon.
Wow, a Buster Douglas reference. That's a deeper cut than I expected. That's good. Awesome.
Oh, bro, shit.
I literally Googled Mike Tyson versus...
Yes.
Because I don't know that shit. But
I will punch him out on the game of the same name.
In America, he was like a cultural force in the 90s, in the early 90s.
Yeah. And he always had your ear. He knew what that tracking device was. He knew how to get rid of it. He broke out. Mike Tyson was the first person to escape the promised Neverland.
Oh my god. Wait, guys, I think my alarm clock says we haven't had a Star Wars reference in over 3 minutes. I would like to make a comparison. All of these characters, I don't know if you noticed, but they have hair just like my favorite Luke Skywalker figurine. I just thought that was interesting. They both have hair. That's a Star Wars reference.
Cool. Anyway, that's about all I really want to say on that particular talking point. I'm not holding it too hard against the Promised Neverland right now, but I do think that this episode would have been stronger if it just had made that scene, or if it wanted to keep it, if it didn't show us the demons in full profile. Keep it to, like, hands, like, one eye maybe, small, incomplete details. Let us in mentally fill in the blanks or try and question it. I think that would have helped sell the tension more rather than just, you know, demons about to play poker or, you know, have a pub quiz. Because that's, like, it takes the edge off it seeing them in such normal circumstances there. That's why we were making all those jokes about him going home and saying, Sally's doing wonderful at school. Her mathematics are on the top of her grade. Like, you know, just saying. Right. So are you two having talking points?
You know, the plant, like, they said the plant, but I thought they meant it as, like, a power plant.
Right, like a conveyor belt as factory, like, type deal.
Yeah, meat processing. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Not, like, a plant with fruit. The fruit was, like, a different kind of...
What's the music they always play in Looney Tunes when they show, like, a factory assembly line? Like, like, what if they just, like, put that over a Neverland, like, of the kids running around? Like, that'd be grim. That'd be grim as fuck.
Oh my god.
But yeah, that's what I took. And I mean, fruit, like, you know, I mean, maybe, right? I mean, maybe they're, I that just sort of seems like a way to talk about, like, product. But they didn't say product, they said fruit, so I don't know, Trace. I mean, it could be a whole
could
kind
be
of thing,
a colorful language from our villains.
Speaking of colorful, like, can we have an English dub of, like, some of the demons speaking in a thick Boston accent?
Mm-hmm. Or we gotta give him the staff. We gotta give him the kits.
Oi, Gov. Oi, Gov. Pass me that little one. I want to take a little nip. I want to take a little nip of brain.
He's like,
no, you twit. That's not for you. That's for the boss.
That's for him. The boss.
Don't you know nothing?
Boston. What's a good... What's a Boston? I don't know. Like... Those kids are a wicked schmat. I don't know how to do a good... I can't do a good Boston.
That's enough. That's all I need to say. The rest of it just plays itself in my head. Talking points.
So, shoot. There was something I was going to say. And I can't... Oh, Yukinon mentioned Elias. And, yeah, I mean, do the designs continue to remind you of... Ancient Mages Pride with the juxtaposition of the skeleton and the flower?
Oh, fuck. Well, that's in my head now and it ain't coming out.
I think you mentioned it early on, I want to say.
I think.
Yeah, I think. Yes.
Did you really call it Mages?
Mages. What should it be? Yeah. Should it be Magus?
Isn't Magus?
Is it Magus?
Well, that's ultra.
What did I
that.
Say? Did that's I say mages?
Mages. Mages.
Well, you like, know, you
like
have mages.
Plural mage.
Yeah.
Plural
yeah.
mage. Yeah.
Uh huh. That's true.
I think it's. I'm pretty sure it's Latin, and it's not as
magic. So should it be magus? Okay.
No.
And then like magic, magus, magi.
The chat.
He's a wizard, yo.
He's a wizard.
Is the ancient mage just... It's ancient wizard.
Is Ryu a wizard?
Is Ryu a wizard? Has he had... Has he had sex?
I don't know. Does Ryu fuck?
Man, how did we get from there to there?
He's my favorite character in Star Wars. Probably doesn't.
I don't have a lot of talking points because I think oftentimes, like when we were doing Banana Fish or Frank's, like part of what informed my talking points would be speculation about things moving forward and things setting a tone, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I can't do that because I know what's going to happen. But I mean, I think we've talked about like most of the relevant, like huge things in the episode, you know, our disappointment with some things about Crone, the differences between the anime and the manga, the, you know, the differences between the characters kind of coming to bear when you're talking about their weaknesses, when you talk about Tag and how that pans out, when you talk about their conversations and the big reveal at the end. So, Shadon, what do you think about Gilda at this point? Well, both of you, like, what do you guys think about Gilda? Like,
To restate what I said earlier, to make this more clear, I don't think Gilda is an active participant, or antagonist against our group. Not right now. I think that she is being scouted and understood as a potential, you know, mole, so to speak. An unwitting mole, like a Manchurian candidate kind of thing.
Right.
But like I said before, with these being children, and oftentimes it bears repeating when you're dealing with the material to remind yourself that these are very young children, like how many shows have we watched in our time, Doc, where, you know, characters are like usually 16, 17, 18 or older? How many times have we dealt with characters younger than that? Rarely, if ever.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, children, like, you know, their needs and their wants are very immediate and very basic. So Gilda, in her case, like, I can just, like, this is no slight against her because she is only a kid, but I can imagine it not taking much for, you know, Crone to come in and just grab her on the shoulder and go, Gilda, I believe that there's something a bit strange going on in, you know, the house. I think that some kids might be misbehaving, shall we say.
Yeah.
I,
Mom trusts here, you.
have this brand new teddy bear. And I was going to give it to someone else, but I thought, you know what, Gilda's a really, really nice girl. She looks out for everyone. Do you not want to look out for your friends right now, Gilda? Do you see how I'm going with this? You see like that?
Mm-hmm.
It really is as simple as that. So I don't think Gilda, if she does end up turning traitor, quote unquote, against the gang, I don't think she's going to do it out of maliciousness. I think she's going to do it because she believes in the status quo and the order that's been built up around them. And she doesn't want that to change or be damaged or harmed. And she's going to do what she thinks is in the best interest of the group, even though that is A, false, but she doesn't know that, and B, you know, against, you know, them doing the same thing. They want to do what's best. So I think that any, you know, foul play on Gilda's part is going to be innocent insofar as she doesn't mean it to be malicious. She means for the best. She's just woefully ill-informed about the harsh reality of the world they live in. And this is the point where she starts seeing out how Emma acts and is acting differently. And, you know, how she's taking great care to check over, you know, Carol and like, wait a minute, why is she doing that?
Mm-hmm.
A bit strange. You sure? And didn't she go to like that gate that night and then came back looking like she was white as a sheet? This is weird.
Mm.
So that's the way, I see it going.
Come back. Well, I guess
she knows it. She knows because she specifically referenced.
Yeah, she specifically references, but I was wondering if we actually see her kind of realize. But
she knows. Okay. That's why. Yeah.
Did you guys catch the shot of the villainous glasses, like, you know, sunlight in the glasses?
Right. Yes, the empty eyes, sunlight in the glasses thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is setting up conflict again, which is, I think, is going to be a theme. I don't know.
Well, it's like I said before as well. My hard bet on this is that Gilda is not going to be coming with them when they leave. And that's just based on the OP, because Gilda ain't part of that group when they're on the other side of that fence.
I didn't watch the full OP because it's spoilers. I just listened to the music, so I don't know. If I had to guess, I would say she has kind of been covertly recruited by Mom, even though Mom didn't actually tell her shit, but she's basically kind of like Mom kind of
is after stuff. Are you has the OP convinced you? Has that won you over that it's a good OP? Good music.
Yeah, the music is all right.
It's good. Music.
It's okay. I think it's good music. It's good music. The thing that I complained was that it's kind of like generic anime OP. Like every anime OP has like the kind of rock, like pop rock sort of thing with the dude that sings and is like kind of out of place most of the time.
Can I just ask again? When the OP
get away
plays,
from me. Sorry, I just
no. It's definitely not that. It's definitely not that. But when the OP plays for TPN. Like, there's a guy who goes, on fire. Like, you all heard that, yeah? Why, I swear blind, that is literally the same guy in the same voice and almost the same word as fight from Mortal Kombat.
Oh my god.
This is another thing we're going to reference every single show. This is the second Mortal
it's
Kombat
true.
Reference on the show.
It's fucking true!
So, I just... Before we go, I just want to extol the virtues of the last scene again. Like, just everything about it was tremendous. I mean, we talked about how it seemed to kind of, the realization and the changing worldview sort of washed over Emma in waves. She's just sort of like, mm-hmm. Oh no. Oh shit. Oh fuck. You know, her eyes are narrowing and face is kind of like just getting more and more panicked. And the sound as well. Like, you sort of, they do this thing where it just sort of sounds like blood rushing in your ears. It sounds like your heart is beating faster, and it gets louder and louder, and it just feels like it's sort of suffocating. And
distant,
then
like the other characters, all the other children playing, becomes more and more distant and washed out.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's like brilliant at getting you into her mindset. Love it.
Mm. It's magnificent. I'm going to have to hold on this until we get to the end of the show. Because currently I'm very much on board of it, but I am going to wonder, like, this show is very filmic in its, like, presentation, and there are certainly anime elements to it. Like, in the previous episode where there was the bit where Emma's eyes go all fuzzy and grey, like that little, like, thing that happens to characters when they're really confused or shocked. And there was a similar sort of thing in this episode as well. So there are that anime-esque elements to it that are unique to it.
Did you guys notice the deep... Like, before Crone pointed out what's with the silence, like, did you notice just the deafening, deep silence like I did?
Mm-hmm,
like, when
mm-hmm.
she was standing on the rock looking around, and I'm just like, have dropped all the sound out.
were you heart slight violence? Did you enjoy the silence?
Nice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Thank you.
That's been, like... kind of a theme again, like we discussed it in the first episode, but yes, the directing is amazing. They know how to use sound, they know how to use silence, they know how to frame things.
Yeah. I'm just curious if in the long run it will have been for the show's benefit. Now hold your thoughts before you say anything on this. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying
it's
wrong.
Watching you with raised karate hands.
I've raised my
karate hands. You're in range.
I'm just curious. I'm just curious. Like, could the thanks for the crane shit there, Doc.
Had to do it.
That fucking praying mantis there. Like, that's terrifying. I'm just throwing this out because, like. A lot of this stuff, I reckon, you could literally take the storyboarding and translate to live action. I've said that before about some stuff, but like this is probably the most true example I can think of, because it's very filmic in its nature. But I'm just curious if like that focus on it being so regular live action framing and design will ultimately be the show's benefit, or if it's losing something by not taking advantage of the otherwise stuff that animation, and anime in particular, can do. Look at Mob Psycho, for example, with its amazing visuals where everything's like, you know, stretching and shifting, like, you know, when Mob like blows up, you know, and that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine the demons being rendered in such a way as that rather than just the very plain way they are now?
I mean, the opening episode, you get like a very sort of wide angle shot of the demons. I don't think they're like afraid to play with that. That's why the scene with the demons at the table is kind of stand out as a horrible thing to me.
But I think what you're saying is like, so take the world of Promised Neverland as a given, right? Like, mm-hmm. let's take that notion of, I mean, it's a fantasy world, but let's take it as given. What you're saying, Shadon, is like that they're not, you know, like you said, stretching or recoloring or morphing or doing anything visually mm-hmm. that like okay. Masaki Yuasa might do, for example, the animator mm-hmm. and artist director of Devilman Crybaby, if you've seen his other works, yeah. Ping Pong the Animation, right?
Yes.
Like those kind of very like specific to animation type things. So you're wondering
correct.
If not doing that and sticking to, okay, what if this world was real and we just made a kind of a film about it? Like what approach is better? That's interesting. Wow, I guess I haven't thought about it at all just because I'm so taken with the world.
Again, like, I will still say there's elements of that in the best example for me is like the horrified faces of and Norman at
That's
the
true.
Beginning.
That's true.
I think just nothing super extreme has happened so far for that sort of thing to come up. Mm-hmm. And even like the last scene of this episode, like if you see how kind of exaggerated Emma's expression was.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not doing the anime down here. Don't get me wrong. I've said many good things about...
I don't think you are. I think
it's just my karate hands arguing.
you're just saying a stylistic choice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I lose my shit every time I see something like the fucking crib framing, you know, that hand and the finger. Like, I'm like, yes! Finally! Someone is making a show and they're not crap! Like,
yes.
they know what the fuck
yes.
they're doing. Like, I don't know. I'm just...
Wait a
I'm
minute.
Just sat thinking,
this episode was animated by one guy?
No, he said the one guy. I was wondering the same thing. So as I'm like, is it one guy or is it like the someone else? Like, the one
guy.
Person that we know
no,
from Star
no,
Wars.
I didn't Star Wars. No, I didn't mean to... No, I was just... when I said Masaki Yuasa, I was just drawing on an example of someone who... really
just,
like plays with his characters yeah. and their shapes and colors and very psychedelic.
Just to address Emily's point there, where you say, I think going too creative takes away from the Twisted Children story. I actually think that could work
point.
In its favor because if more of this was filtered through the kids' perceptions, then it could be treated as in the same way that kids treat, you know, the fictional monsters that they believe in that hide in cupboards or beds, you know. Horror often relies on intangibility to really sell itself effectively. And so when you start doing that kind of stretching or more fluid motion or animation that I suggested, like in Mob Psycho or in Devilman, etc., if it was framed in such a way from that for the kids and that the demons were less definitively stated on screen visually, I think it would actually work in its favor in that case. Now, that's a big what if, of course, and we're never going to get that. And
wow.
I'm certainly incredibly happy with what we've got here, but I'm just curious if ultimately, like, the show might have been just a smidgen little better if they had decided to take in that different route and try and, you know, go that way by more, not adhering so much to, like, strictly, like, live-action film techniques and idioms and, you know, things that we've seen before, and more go for, like, the full animation thing where everything is a bit more out there, a bit more liquid.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Please go ahead.
No, go on. No, go on. Go on. I've finished.
Oh, by the way, Felix did mention like that. Ryosuke, is that Nishii? Ryosuke Nishii. Did basically a solo job on the animation this episode. So that's pretty rad. Hats
that's
off to you.
That's super rad.
Like that yeah. did an incredible job.
Yeah, we know you're listening. Hey,
yeah,
good
exactly.
job, dude.
Yo. But I'm going to go ahead and stick my neck out and say that I would not like that. I think I'm going to go in the camp of Emily in chat that, like, I think that making it even more fantastical in its presentation would maybe undercut some of the, not necessarily the terror, but just how chilling it is.
Mm. I mean, what I would say is the human, like, especially facial expressions and crones, like mannerisms, are already kind of pretty out there.
Right.
This is true.
What I want to see is the monsters, like, if they did that sort of hyper, like, fantastical, very, like, not unrealistic, but very unnatural-looking movements and animation styles with the monsters, that would be effective, and that's something I would like to see. I don't want to see them move like humans or, like, badly animated humans.
Nah.
Again, this scene where they're at the table is just stands out badly, even though I get its purpose. Animation-wise and, like, how much... Jadon, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Don't cover the Nando's sponsorship with your hand, please. Just contain your mm-hmm. We're losing money.
Cease and desist. That's my revenue stream that you're waving around.
We're sorry to inform you that Jadon will not be participating in future episodes of the Stream of Thought.
You've been blacklisted.
Just by the way, to go back on to the point of animation styles, I mean, there is the idea that Yuki pitched, which was to basically turn Promised Neverland into a tokusatsu show.
Oh, I don't want to see that. No.
You know what I would have loved to see?
Mom!
If the...
Crone! Like, no! Don't do that!
What if the monsters... in this were basically CGI squids.
Nope.
And we're barely
No. Man.
We're gonna find the clip of that and post it as the finale to the Promised Neverland.
No.
This episode has been a lot. It's been a lot for me, personally. Yes. All right. Should we revisit Twitter here?
Let's revisit Twitter.
Twitter for it.
Oh, wait. Should we rate the episode or do Twitter first?
Twitter first, then rate.
Okay.
Twitter for it.
Oh, my God.
Let's see.
Let us see.
Da 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 da. Opening the polls. Opening the polls. Open.
Thanks for joining us, Maggie Moon. Catch you later.
Yep. See you later. Thank you.
Oh my God.
For dropping by.
Oh, I thought Shaitan was leaving. Goodbye.
Okay. Ahem. See, those are polls from last week. Here are the polls.
Child actors. If this worked in live action, if a Western studio was making it in live action, the actors would be like 20 years old and they would try to cast them for like 16-year-olds.
Big, like, tall Justin Bieber haircuts. Yes. Have like trendy backpacks and stuff. Like, yes. Yo, bro.
How you do, fellow nerds?
Yes, exactly. So, like, okay, palsy polls. How do you feel about Sister Crone's design in TPL? 61% say bothers me, yes. 39% say doesn't bother me at all. And right now, 0% in these early days say that it really, really bothers them. Those are the three and only three choices. The only three valid opinions. No, I'm just kidding. Is Carol the absolute best? I'm really disappointed.
Boy, we're in a minority here. Wow.
I'm so disappointed in this. 55% say, sure. And 45%, including Vorg and I, say yes!
Like, comment, and subscribe if you want Carol to shoot the giant squid.
I don't even know what you just said. What did you just say? Like, there were words, like, in a sequence that technically formed a sentence. But I didn't understand one fucking iota of it. Holy shit. Was that a fanfiction.net title?
I'm throwing Twitch bits at you.
Jesus fucking Christ, Mark. Like, are you an algorithm? Is that how you generate that?
You are the YouTube children's algorithm.
I know we call you the dark web, but holy shit.
This a poll done that is an official poll, but it was posted by Virgilia. Which plushie should the subtle doctor smooch next? The Gretzko head has 67% of the vote, so... This webcam show that we've started. No. white hair in anime. Hot or not? 88% say hot.
I'm biased, so I'm
very
saying
good.
No.
We're among our people.
Can you tell why I'm biased, folks?
Oh no!
Our final poll.
Beards for life.
Would you? And then there's a link to the picture of the fellow with the Ray tattoo on his neck. 89% say hell no. 11% say they already have. Which is my favorite answer.
Maybe he's just preparing for the post-apocalypse. Who can say? You know, maybe he's just got some really strong foresight.
I wouldn't put it past our listeners. / viewers. Okay. We want to rate the episode now?
Yes, indeed. Who first? Vlog, do you want to go first? Doc, do you want to go first?
I'll go first. There were some little things about the Crone character, little deviations that... Not simply because they were deviations. Again, I really don't want to come across like the guy like, well, you like the movie, but have you read the book? like that person. Like, but what they did, I was kind of like, eh, I don't know how I'm feeling. I feel kind of lukewarm on it. So
was that the noise of a Formula One car going around the corner? That was incredible, dog.
That sound cannot be replicated. Like, even if you try, you cannot replicate
that. No.
I would never tattoo anything anime related on myself. It's a mirror. Amen. I love anime, but I don't think
I'm just sticking to buying figures. I saw them unboxing a Cheryl figure, by the way.
Oh my God, Yuki, I'm not even going to say what you, I cannot. I'm going to give it a four shitty crystal backgrounds out of 5.
You know, I'm a big fan of this rating system where we actually explain the ratings and we don't actually just throw a number. You know, it's pretty good. Crone's stuff was, still bothers me, but it was a bit distracting. But I get what they were doing narratively, even though I don't support it and I don't enjoy it. So just coming at this from just like, you know, how it advances the chess game, how it introduces new stuff, how it develops our characters, how it introduces the new unpredictable villain.
Do you need your batteries changed?
I give it 2 Steven Spielbergs out of Sugoi.
That's the highest rating one can give on this show. Holy shit.
Konnichiwa. Steven Spielberg desh.
How do I follow that?
The greatest thing, the internet has produced a manifold great clips, but perhaps none better than Konnichiwa Steven Spielberg guests.
How do I follow that, folks? Like, Jesus Christ, you've left me in a shit situation. All right, okay, so, just to recap.
Okay.
What do you even say, Vaughn? It's like...
She's getting the giggle fits. We've really tickled her. We've tickled her. I like
it. Oh my god, you're making fun of me. Ah!
Don't bully Virgilia. It's fun when she's tickled.
Karate hands.
Anyway. So, for me, I can't, again, say enough how much I adore the direction of this show, even if I'm just, you know, being that cynical, you know, nitpicky arsehole, you know, man yells at cloud bastard that I am. The directional touches were fantastic. I really love, again, like that little moment with Carol, like the finger, like I felt like it was such a touchstone moment for this show. The development of the plans, the game that was also not quite a game of tag, which was really interesting and told us more about like what potentially could happen down the line. Wasn't so fond of the world building stuff that was distinct from the children themselves, particularly the demon table, but that was 10 seconds, maybe, if I had to be like, of the entire episode. The music was on point, the visuals were brilliant. I'm going to go the same as Doc here. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 maps of the Earth of questionable accuracy.
4 out of 5 calendar forgeries.
Having that said, we didn't even address like the 2015 versus 2045 thing or whatever.
I think that's a typo.
In the actual thing.
I'm not saying that's a typo.
Oh, did we? Was there a 2015?
We just talked about it in chat, but we didn't actually.
Was there something in the episode with 2015 on it?
Well, the map has 2010 on it.
Oh, okay.
The calendars have 2015.
What do? What does?
Yeah, and the children say 2015.
No, oh, do they say it already? Oh, I feel so bad.
They say it like, yeah, you know, like, this would be 2015 technology, like, it can't be that advanced.
I'm fairly certain that Ray at some point says 2045, where that comes from.
That's on the calendar. Well, there's a calendar on the wall that shows today's date.
I'm getting them the wrong way around.
So I just publicly, I want to apologize to Meggie Moon in chat, like, they said something about like 2015, like the different, and I was like, oh no, like thinking it was a spoiler because, and so I removed the comment. I'm so sorry. I thought it was a spoiler, but if they mention it in this episode, it's totally fair game. I'm so, my bad, yeah. My bad. I don't want to come across like an iron fisted.
They're establishing world building. It was very nice. I like how we're kind of like seeing these episodes, like even from the ratings discussion, I think like Doc looks a bit more like to us that like you mostly discussed about aesthetics. Like I discuss about narrative and plot. Shadon discusses about like the visuals and the direction.
Hmm. I would like to just talk about. I'd be speculating to high heaven about the plot if I hadn't read the manga. I just feel like I can't talk about it so much. But
oh my god. Okay.
But I
realize that your lack of poker face is spoiling everything for me. Like at all times.
It's fine. We all clearly know that the lead villain, you know, is of course the Grimace from McDonald's.
The Grimace.
Yeah. Fucking Grimace is gonna be the one who eats all the children.
My
the Grimace
favorite
is him.
My favorite comment from the chat. The world is going to make so little sense. I'm angry about it now in preparation. I hope your life is happier in the future. 100%.
Can I just say one last thing about 2015? Like, that was that the year in the manga when it was first written and released?
Oh boy. I don't know.
Is that is that
no?
So
I think I think it was more recent. I think it was 2017, but no, that's just a total guess.
So the manga came out recently, but the year of the in the world of the Promised Neverland is 2015.
No,
like, December 2016. So it was probably written in 2015.
Yeah. The date of the day that we see in the show is like October 2045.
Mm. I like that as a detail because like I've said before, I always think of old action movies in the not too distant future of LA 1996.
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, Fist of the North Star showing it was smarter than everyone and set itself in 1990X. Yeah.
Needs to get on Mega Man levels here.
Or 19XX.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Not even the 90s. Just sometime in the 20th century. You don't know when.
Yeah,
in the distant future, 2024.
You can't check the history books to find it. It'll take you at least like 3 hours. Eat that, anime audience.
Damn. Well, anyway, let us conclude for the evening. So, thank you, as always, everyone in chat for listening and joining us this fine evening. It's always a pleasure to have you along. Thank you so much. Honestly, fuck. We wouldn't be doing this. Simply wouldn't.
Yep. Yes. So, love you, chat.
Volgellia, where can people find you on the dark web?
It's on the screen.
I've done this for so long.
Just say it out loud. There's a podcast, audio only crowd.
I know. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. So twitter.com/regalia, twitch.tv/regalia, anything/regalia is me. If it's not me, it's not me, but it's me.
If it's not me, then it's me.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Doc.
I am at the Subtle Doctor on Twitter. Also, if you would like to watch video gamers streams, twitch.tv/thesubtledoctor. You can watch along, chat along live. I'll post those to the YouTube channel after the fact. So yeah, hit me up.
Oh, show.
Des.
And you can you can find me at Shane1010 on Twitter and similarly on Curious Cat There Me. If you want to ask me things like, you know, about how's your scalp? Or, you know, please don't ask me that.
Don't ask.
Have you been to Nando's lately?
Not to Nando's specifically, but have I told you about Nando's spicy chicken? Available in your local store.
Listen, folks, I was eating Brand X of chips before now, and let me tell you, were terrible. I didn't know what I was missing until I found Nando's, the cheeky chip. Available in 5 Felix, fine flavors. No, sorry, go ahead.
To answer your question, Felix, we have to be kind of semi-flexible with stream of 4 and when the days are. This is mainly my fault because my streaming time is very depending on if I'm working later than usual or if there are outside events happening, which they are becoming more and more.
Your life, your real life is getting in the way. How dare you?
I'm sorry. But we tend to aim to get the streams done as quickly as possible after the episode comes out. So Monday is a fairly safe bet, I would say. Although things may change. The other week, for example, I was out of the country at the time that we otherwise would have streamed, so that's why it was delayed a little bit.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, we'll try and get it out there in advance when we'll be doing it. But Monday is usually a safe. Anyway, that is the end of the Promised Neverland episode 3. Will!
I'm so sorry for blowing up your ears with my laughter this episode more than the other ones. I'm very sorry. It's only going to get worse, and you brought it on yourselves.
Good. Please.
It's fine.
Also, I'll remember next time to plug in my high quality microphone because this is shit. I'm sorry.
Maybe there's a chance that though. It's like, you know, like when you play a vinyl record back on an old
player.
Right.
It has a warmer sound.
Anyway, so yes, that's it. Promised Neverland episode 3. What'll happen next time?
Is guarding the iconic desk fan. That's his job. It's right there. He's guarding it. Nobody can touch it.
Mm. He's also wearing that hat to hide the supercomputer he's recently installed in the brain.
Beep,
anyway,
boop.
Insert beep, beeping boop. Noises in post.
Beep, boop. So, thank you all again so much for listening to us. If you have liked this podcast, by the way, and you happen to be, you know, listening to our iTunes, or if you're not even, please do feel free to take a moment to leave us a rating and review on iTunes or SoundCloud, because it really does help our discoverability, helps us get us out there, helps get more cool and awesome people like yourself to come join us. It would really, really mean a lot. We don't want any of your money, but we certainly wouldn't mind you just taking 2 minutes just to drop one of those for us on our iTunes or SoundCloud. But in the meantime, until next week, ladies and gentlemen and MBs, thank you all again so much for joining us for another stream of 4 Hero Warrior Show. I've been Shade, and that's been Doc, that's been Volgellia, and as always, everyone, until next time, brace yourself for everyone, the ends of the universe, and a very good night.
No te rindas, la luz te espera.
Sugoi. Dog is headbanging again. Shodan is looking dead inside. This is what's happening right now. Coming to you live from